You're listening to Reading Writers, a podcast on the joy of reading widely.
Hi, I'm Aaron, and welcome to the latest episode of Reading Writers. With me today is my special guest host, Emily Armstrong, my wife.
Hello there.
So right now we are recording from our luxurious master bedroom closet.
It is luxurious. We've never had a master bedroom closet. I mean, not like this.
I know. That
we'd
sounds...
actually stand in it.
It's true. We can. And the fact that we got two chairs, ourselves, and a whole bunch of stuff in here.
Many miscellaneous boxes.
Yeah.
The stuff that used to be in our basement.
That's right.
The basement that we discussed last time.
That's right. Listeners, you are getting some insight into the Armstrong household here.
That's right.
This is also the secret of all fine podcast making. Most of it is done in closets.
That's right.
All right. So today we are talking a little bit about...
old books.
Old books.
This is something Aaron wanted to talk about today.
That's right. That's right. There are literally hundreds of books being published every single week.
Hundreds?
Yes.
There's got to be more than hundreds. There's got to be like thousands of books.
Maybe a gobbledygillion.
A floppity quabillion?
Yes. That sounds like an appropriate fake number.
That's right.
All right. So there's a floppity billion books being published every single day. And so how do you choose what to read?
I don't know. Because a lot of it's just junk, too.
That's true.
There's a lot of less than the best out there.
Well, fortunately, we're not talking about those kind of books today. We are talking about making sure that you are balancing out your reading diet.
Ah, balance.
Yes.
What are you talking about?
Well, reading is one of those things that it's really easy to get into unhealthy patterns with.
Explain.
Well, if you read too much of anything, of any one single thing, it can be not good for you because you're not exercising different parts of your brain. You're not thinking about things differently. You're just kind of doing the same old thing in the same old way, which really is kind of boring. Whereas if you are reading a variety of different kinds of books, you are exercising all kinds of different parts of your brain. You are thinking about things. You are being challenged by different ideas.
So we need to have balance. We need to exercise our brains. We need to chart different courses within our own minds using various types of material, fiction and nonfiction, fantasy versus reality.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
But I only like reading nonfiction books that tell me things.
I know. Well, you have a very utilitarian view of reading.
That's right.
That's true.
That's right.
Yeah.
Utility is the utmost importance.
Right. Yeah. Except that's not why God made us creative people.
But I like being smart. And if I know all the things, then I can win.
Well, and here's one of the great reasons for you to read older books too, is because you get to understand where certain cultural reference points come from.
Hmm.
So you'll find it's kind of like when you read something in the King James version of the Bible,
mm-hmm.
Is that occasionally you'll stumble across something that is just a common phrase.
Or you'll stumble across unicorns.
Or you'll stumble across unicorns. That's right. So here's the reason why we're talking about this and still talking about this is a lot of people want to read older books. They want to be diverse in their reading. They don't want to just be reading the latest thing that came out yesterday,
mm-hmm.
And is the brand new hot book. They want to read something that's going to last. And certainly there's nothing wrong with reading new books, but it's how do you start?
Mm.
And so that's what we want to help you with today is we want to give you both some advice and a few suggestions.
That's right.
For what you can read. So let's talk about the suggestions first.
Okay.
Okay. So if you're a nonfiction reader, which I am, in addition to fiction reading,
mm-hmm.
which you are, primarily because you have utilitarian reading habits.
I have a bend.
Yes, you do. And there's nothing wrong with that. Liking nonfiction is a good thing. Although you have been reading more lately.
I've been reading
lately.
A little bit of fiction, yes.
Yeah.
But it's hard for me to actually sit down and get into fiction because usually I have somebody asking me to wipe their butt.
That's true.
Or something like that. And so I'll be, you know, in the middle of this fantastic scene and then I hear, Mommy! I need you.
Yes.
Yes. And so that kind of breaks me out of the reverie. And so it's really hard to want to sit down
right.
and read fiction, whereas I can, you know, absorb facts and figures and ideas
right
a little bit faster.
Yes. So have you noticed in the in your factual books that there are these amazing things called footnotes?
Yes, and I read them.
Yes.
They're amazing.
Yes, you do. Have you noticed that very often those footnotes point to other books?
Yes.
Yes. So there this is your first is the first piece of advice. If you're reading a book that is chock full of footnotes, maybe consider reading some of those books.
I did that one time.
Yeah.
I can't remember what book it was, but it was a few years ago and I was reading a book and I found where it was listed in the appendix.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually went and took that other one out of the library too.
There you go. Fantastic. So for the, how can I put this delicately? For the theology nerds like me out there.
It was delicate.
That was actually. So for folks like me who really dig theology books, in addition to all the other kind of books that they covet, the best thing we can do is we can actually, we can look at who the guys that we like who are modern writers, who they enjoy. So for all the John Piper fans out there, they're gonna gravitate towards Jonathan Edwards. They're also gonna look at C.S. Lewis. They're gonna look at these kind of guys. So Piper can serve as essentially the gateway into reading a couple hundred years back.
Mm-hmm.
Which is pretty incredible. In the same way that if you love Tim Keller, well, the reason that you love reading Tim Keller is because he loves reading C.S. Lewis. Mm. And the reason you love reading C.S. Lewis is because C.S. Lewis loved reading George MacDonald, who we've read with our kids as well.
Yes, his The Princess and the Goblin and then The Princess and Curdie.
Yes, which are both fantastical stories and quite wonderful. And so that's your first piece of advice. If you're looking for an older book to read, read what the people you enjoy are currently reading.
Mm-hmm.
The second piece. There's three pieces of advice
there's three
here.
Three pieces.
Three pieces of advice here.
Are we going to be able to cram all this in?
We are doing it. Second piece of advice is to get into a routine of rotating what you read. And this is a tricky thing, admittedly. I don't do this perfectly. You can attest to this. Although I kind of go, I rotate a lot in terms of what I'm reading, just not necessarily the age of what I'm reading. Basically, the idea is that for every, C.S. Lewis actually gave the advice that for every one new book that you read, you should read 10 old ones, which, I mean, it's kind of extreme, but maybe make sure that at least one out of every 10, or if you're really ambitious, one out of every 4 is something that is at least 50 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually not that hard. When you're talking about something that's 50 years old, you're talking about something that was written in the 1960s.
Yes.
If you want to get ambitious.
When my parents were teenagers.
I know.
Like, we can still understand the language from
yes.
back then.
Yes. So that's the second piece of advice. The third piece of advice, this is one of those things that it really just comes down to a mindset thing, is that is to remember that very few of the books that are being written right now are going to last.
That's true.
Very few of them are books that you're going to turn to in 10, 15, maybe even 2 years,
mm-hmm.
in all honesty. I mean, there are books that, I mean, I'm sure you can remember me saying, you know, man, saying, I loved reading this book. This was so helpful.
And you never read it again.
Exactly. And those are the ones that you kindly encourage me to purge.
Mm-hmm. Well, because you're not enjoying them anymore.
Right.
And you did enjoy them. And you'll always have those memories.
Right.
But now it's time for somebody else
to
love your book.
Right.
And that's okay.
Is this your way of saying that I need to get rid of more books on my bookshelf?
I think that there's always room for selectivity.
So those are your big pieces of advice. Follow the footnotes. Set up a healthy rotation for your reading. And just remember to prioritize. Because most of what you're reading now isn't going to last forever. So why not spend time reading things that have stood the test of time, things that have proven to be true, proven to be helpful, or proven to have had something about them that is worth continuing to consider, to study, or even to be warned by,
mm-hmm.
you know? Because, I mean, when you think about Aldous Huxley's works,
oh yes.
For example,
oh,
we're not gonna get into all like into a whole kind of exercise in.
See, Aaron knows that I've read The Doors of Perception, and I read it as a teenager. And
yes.
Wow, I don't think my parents understood what I was reading.
No, probably not. But when you read a lot of these kind of books, even 1984, and how They were almost prescient in their...
And some people read them and thought, what a great idea!
Yes.
Which is terrifying.
Yeah, they didn't...
No, they're dystopian fantasies.
Yes.
Dystopian!
Yes. So that's as far as we're going to get on that. I'm sorry. This is not the...
But I want to rant.
This is not the Happy Rant podcast, Emily. Instead, so we've talked about the principles. Let's talk about a few really good books that are older to consider. And so here is one that's actually by a living author. It's actually his first book, and it's still incredibly relevant and probably even more relevant today than it was when it was first written about 60 years ago.
I'm on pins and needles now.
It is J.I. Packer's Fundamentalism and the Word of God. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. So this was written in the height of some pretty heavy controversies in British evangelicalism, dealing with issues of scripture.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? Is it true?
Now, was the word fundamentalism a hot button word during that time, or has it become more of a hot button word recently?
It has always been a hot button.
It's always been a hot
it's
button.
It's always
word.
Been a hot
okay,
button.
Okay, I was not aware of that.
Yeah. So it. The word itself came out of a reaction to Protestant liberalism in the late 19th century.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
And was it a, so it was a label that people gave themselves to distinguish themselves from?
Initially.
And then it became sort of a.
Curse word.
Curse word.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, so
a put down.
Yeah, so honestly, if you just change a few names and a couple of places, it sounds exactly like the debates we've been having for the last, really for the last 50 years. So I found that book really fascinating and really helpful to read because it shows that sin and heresy are terribly unoriginal. So Fundamentalism and the Word of God is book number one that I would recommend. A second book is actually a series. I have a collected edition. C.S. Lewis's Space Trilogy. So these are really neat books because this was kind of C.S. Lewis's take on a science fiction fairy tale and exploring some of the same kind of concepts again that he was dealing with, you know, in subtler ways in the Narnia books. It's fascinating for me to read Lewis fiction for grown-ups.
I'm assuming that it's absolutely nothing like Frank Herbert's The Jesus Incident.
Not even close.
I figured. I just wanted to ask you about that.
Nope. Another book. Book number three that I really enjoy. I enjoy just about anything by Charles Spurgeon.
He has a way, doesn't he?
He does. He is a very clever writer.
Mm-hmm.
He is a very witty writer, which are not necessarily the same things.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very poignant. One book that I would recommend actually is All of Grace.
Okay.
And
All of Grace.
Yes. And so this was a book that actually was written more with an evangelistic bend.
Hmm.
Yeah. And I was reading it actually, I want to say about 7 years ago when I was waiting for you while you were in the hospital with some pretty serious stuff.
Yes.
And so it was just really helpful for me to read this book during that time. And it was very encouraging and I think helped me keep things together so that I could still function at the end of the day.
That's a good thing for a book to be able to do.
Mm-hmm.
Would you recommend it for other people dealing with traumatic issues? Or was it just kind of, it worked for you?
I think it was one that, to some degree, it just kind of worked for me.
Okay.
I certainly wouldn't say that someone shouldn't read it in those circumstances, but it's not really what it was intended for. Okay. It was just very helpful for me at that particular time.
Okay.
So, All of Grace by Charles Spurgeon is wonderful.
Have you got another one for us?
Another book that is older and is very helpful and that I really enjoy in general actually is The Time Machine by H.G. Wells.
Hmm.
Yes.
Okay.
And
a little bit of steampunk there going on.
That's right. That's right. I really enjoy 19th century fiction, science fiction.
I can understand why. And, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and again, it has that kind of prescient vision type thing going on. And you see that with Jules Verne as well.
Yeah.
Reading Journey to the Center of the Earth right now.
Yes, I've taken a few days off, partially because I know that the next chapter is going to be super terrifying, and I don't want to be broken out of it partway through,
mm-hmm.
because he's... the main character it gets lost.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to be super committed to it and then have the kids ask me for stuff and then me freak out on them because I was super committed to it and I'm all scared.
Yeah, that's a good
yeah.
That's a good reason.
Yeah. But I do like it, and I think one of the things I really like about it is it's just, it could be. Like, it mm-hmm. it's, there are some things that are obviously fanciful, but the way that it's written, it's, you could almost believe that these scientific explanations might actually make sense.
Right.
And that's what I think is really fun about it.
Cool. Cool. Well, I think those are some really good recommendations. I mean, people are going to have a lot to work with just even with those five, especially considering one of them is three.
Mm-hmm.
So,
can I make two recommendations?
You can.
Okay. So one is there's this magical place called the library.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm, for people who know me, I'm just a huge fan of libraries.
Mm-hmm.
Now, most librarians don't really know how to stock the Christian section. They just kind of look at the back and go, ah, it's about Jesus, I guess, and shove it in there.
Mm-hmm.
So you won't necessarily get the best picks in that particular genre. But if you're looking for the classics and you, mm-hmm. you want to have a sense of some books that have lasted, even your local librarian is going to be able to steer you. Another place that I've read books from is archive.org.
Mm.
They have digitized all sorts of old books. One that I read a few years ago, which was absolutely fascinating, and you know how much I love my facts,
mm-hmm.
was The American Housewife.
Mm-hmm.
It was published in 1863, and they put it all online, and it was amazing. It was
mm-hmm.
The book basically assumed that you were 19 years old and had never run a household before,
yeah,
and told you everything you could possibly need to know to run your household in the 1800s. It was fantastic, and how to set everything from how to cook meals at different budget levels,
yeah,
and how to work with servants,
uh-huh.
like if you're going to be working with servants, what to expect of them, and
yeah.
how to set a table, and how to entertain large groups, and even stuff like how to preserve fish.
Mm.
People used to keep, if you were going to preserve fish, you would have to preserve it in the cellar on a cold rock.
Mm.
Things yeah. that were very important during
yes.
that day, and it made me so much more appreciative, in even how to wash clothes properly, which was a lot harder.
Yes.
I love my washing machine.
Good.
So that's one of the many books that is available, and mm-hmm. there's other repositories online. A lot of universities have digitized books that are now
mm-hmm.
What's the word? Like, rights have expired. Like, anybody can
public
use them
domain.
Now. Public domain. They've digitized all sorts of public domain books.
Yeah.
So that you can read them online.
Yep. Yeah. And Yale has all of Jonathan Edwards' works available.
There you go.
For example. Yeah. There's Christian Classic mm-hmm. Library online. They've got a whole bunch of stuff too, which is just crazy to think about. And of course, because people are entrepreneurial, there are literally thousands of versions of public domain books,
of course,
available for your Kindle on Amazon.
That's right.
So,
and in homeschooling bundles.
Yes, and of course in homeschooling bundles. I can't forget about that. So that seems like a good place to leave it for today.
I think so.
All right. So Emily, thank you for filling in with me and helping me out today.
Thank you for giving me a reason to promote libraries.
Absolutely. You're welcome. And listeners, you will find links to lots and lots and lots of books and resources that we have talked about today in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and come on back next week as we talk more about the joy of reading widely.
But I might not be back here next week.
You may not be.
Who's going to be here next week?
That's a good question.
You don't know?
I'm hoping.
Am I going to be the default?
No.
Okay. You'll find somebody else?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Take care, everybody.
Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Reading Writers Podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, please consider leaving a review and a rating on iTunes. Your reviews help other people find the show. You can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/AaronStrongarm. You can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/bloggingtheologically. And for more content, please visit bloggingtheologically.com. I'm Aaron Armstrong, and I'll be back next week with a new episode of Reading Writers.